No, I asked how it went for you. Well, I'm sure you have asked me for reasons.
Right.
Well, there are various advantages in a conference, yes. But anyway, we're going to immediately go over to the adoption of the agenda. Thank you, Honourable Buyani. And someone to second it. Thank you, Honourable Williams. And now for apologies, I know we have a written one for Honourable Tierko. I'm not sure about the rest.
The other one is Advocate Albert on party business.
I do want to make a statement about party business. You simply cannot say party business, and that's the end of the matter. I've tackled this with all parties, and at least I have an understanding now from the Chief Whip of the EFF that the member concerned will indicate the ANC, their Chief Whip will indicate the reason or the office of the Chief Whip. I haven't yet approached the Freedom Front, so I will approach them. The IFP have also agreed on that. I can say party business. Everyone sitting here can say that, you know. The fact of the matter, in Parliament we are on party business, and I wonder if people understand that. So we need to know, are you on party business here, or, you know, in your constituency, or your province, or your region, or your structure? And the Office of the Chief Whip is given that information. So I don't want to have to repeat that again to any political party. I want us to safely move ahead, as it were, and there are, you know, some interesting faces that we have not seen for a long time, and that is the Chief Operating Officer, is that right? Ms. Jodie Skultz, Group Chief Operating Officer, the most senior person here from DTI, who has been on a sabbatical, but her sabbatical meant coming backwards and forwards, which I think the people appreciate. Then we have here several other notaries, people we have engaged with, but that are important for us to engage again. The National Lotteries Board, the chairman of the board, Professor Neville Tunder, thank you very much. The NLC commissioner, Mrs. Mampani, thank you. And then we have the Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Ledwaba. Thank you. And on that note, we're going to... I'm not sure who the person is at the back.
PMG.
Oh, right. Thank you. Let's go ahead then. Immediately, we're in your hands, Professor.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and the honorable members of the committee, and we are thankful that you have called us to come and account and give you the second quarter report. But maybe as a precursor, the NLC, ever since the portfolio committee engaged us from the problems of the past, we were able to get clean audit. It is very difficult for a funding, a grant making organization to get a clean audit. Even this financial year, we also again received the clean audit. It is through the advice of the members of the committee, irrespective of their political parties, raising issues with us, and we went back and corrected them. However, we might have erred on the way, but we are working towards perfection. I have to give you the highlights for the second quarter, 2017-2018. In terms of the regulatory mandate of the NLC, the Commission convened last year to look at the issue of regulation. We have realized that our business is confused between grant funding and regulating. We have realized that grant funding, yes, we do disburse big monies, but our role, the most important role, is to regulate the lottery and other lotteries, like your illegal lotteries, scams, and many other things. So last year we invited people to come around the table to discuss about how can we regulate this industry in order to make sure that we safeguard the participants and we also increase the money that must go to the beneficiaries. This was held at CSIR on the 12th of September 2017. We invited a lady from overseas who advises most of the lotteries in the world. We met her when we attended the World Lottery Conference. The other matter that followed was the INDABA, where we call beneficiaries, and we looked at the resolutions of the past year, whether we achieved them or we didn't achieve them. So members themselves, they interacted. This INDABA was a very good one for us because we were interacting with beneficiaries live in the on the screens of the TV so that everybody can see what we are doing. They can criticize us where they saw it fit. There are six resolutions emanated from that endeavor. The first one is to ensure assessments of funding impact through providing beneficiaries with feedback following site visits. We have increased our team to do site visits. We know that we don't have many staff members and many trained people, but we are training them to visit the different projects. We have got a monitoring and evaluation team that goes and evaluate whether the project that has been applied for is a relevant one or whether it will have an impact on the community. The second one, extend capacity building initiatives for beneficiaries to improve understanding of compliance and governance requirements. We have already started now with provincial small endeavors wherein we invite beneficiaries. We are coming from the one in KwaZulu-Natal, which was on Tuesday and Wednesday, wherein we talk to the provincial government and also the mayors within that that province. Exploring legislative and policy alignment on matters relating to cooling off period. Honorable Chairperson and members, you would be aware that I raised this as a concern which needs to be explored thoroughly because organizations are now crying that if we put them on 12-month period after finishing their grant, then it means for that particular year, the crèche or any organization will not be getting funding. So the rest of this are in the documents that honorable members are having. We also extend beneficiary capacity building initiatives with regard to societal lotteries. We are also, one other thing that we arrived at we are telling organizations that they too can be regarded as conducting small lotteries, fundraising. They come and apply to the lottery and do their own fundraising like schools. This is the information which the way lottery works is as follows. We regulate lottery and other lotteries. Now the question is, what are the other lotteries? Other lotteries are these small lotteries that schools, organizations can do their sustainability project by applying to lottery and exactly societal lotteries. Then we also looked at infrastructure projects. We spoke to the beneficiaries and they felt, I think this is the direction that lottery must take. It can't be just free for all. There must be projects that we fund and we can invite honorable members of parliament to go and look at that project. It must not be a 2-day or 3-day project. That must be a project that they can go and see after 5 years. The progress on ministerial priorities, quarter two, it was education and awareness. We have achieved that. And we must also indicate, Honorable Chairperson, in the offices of the NLC, there is no backlog. What we are doing is all applications have been adjudicated. We are facing in payments. Yes, there could be some hiccups. Other organizations might think that there is still backlog, but as of now, there is no backlog. We are going to start from a clean slate when we come to April. There's no backlog. All our distributing agencies are not adjudicating now. They are waiting for people to come in with projects because it is an open-ended application. We no longer do the opening and closing. Anyone who wants to apply can move in and hand the application. The full-time agencies, yes, the Department of Trade and Industry, together with the Minister, helped us to appoint the Arts and Culture and charities. We are left with Sport and Recreation. Because we are trying to implement the resolution of this committee to say, let these people be full-time. We have now tested it for a year. We have realized that if they are 5-5 or 9-9, the bill, because each member is earning more than $1 million per annum, so that will have a very big impact on the funds that must go to the beneficiaries. However, we have raised it with the minister, and I hope that the department will give us guidance, because we have tested this in the past. Last year, we combined sport and charities to adjudicate charity projects, which were more than 15,000 applications. 15,000. They combined and adjudicated together. So the model of sometimes combining them without losing their entity can also assist the organization to deal with problems that we faced in the past. We have tested it. The illegal lotteries, as I said, we are focusing on clamping down the illegal lotteries, because these are lotteries that are stealing a lot of money. The problem is that they take the numbers of the operator. When it is jackpot or Powerball, they ask people to bet on the numbers of that particular organization. And they don't pay anything to the national lottery. It goes to their pockets. Example, Lotto Star and many other, what we're saying is that these illegal lotteries, for example, if Ituba gives the winning numbers, so they ask the public to say no, choose amongst those numbers, and people play, and they promise them millions and millions, and we've never tested that on the ground. I'm told that last year they even promised 100 million. And to be honest, we only know that it is the national lottery that we can ascertain that 110 million was won by four individuals last week. So that we can testify to the public because we go and verify. The proactive funding, we have applied it in charities, 7 projects, arts, 3 projects, sport, 2 projects. Monitoring of the operator, as I said, we are monitoring the operator every day. We also have the system in our building that shows where the machines are not functioning. If it is here in Western Cape and the 4 machines are not working, we can see it on our screen that this machine is not working. So we are trying to make them to perform. Memorandum of understanding. We have signed a memorandum with NGB. We are implementing it because we have realized that there is a lot of common denominator synergies between ourselves and the NGB. And we're happy that the gambling bill was going to be successful because it was going to relegate the bookmakers and other bodies that are stealing the money, that are getting money without paying to the national lottery, to ask permission from a national lottery so that we give them permission and they give us money to give the beneficiaries. In a nutshell, Chairperson, before I give Ms. Mampane, is that National Lottery, amidst other problems, there will be problems. It is now a well-oiled machine, which members can come and visit and check. We were having the Deputy Minister doing a walkabout in every office just to check whether our people are on the job or they are just relaxing. So there are many things that the National Lottery can achieve under the supervision of this committee. And we welcome criticisms where beneficiaries are crying or where beneficiaries are reporting us. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Professor. And we're now over to the Commissioner, Mrs. Thabang Mampane.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will just quickly take you through this framework, which gives an idea of the type of organization we are, that our vision is to be a catalyst for social upliftment. Our mission is to regulate all lotteries and sports pools with integrity and ensure the protection of all participants to maximize revenue for good causes and in a responsible manner to distribute funds equitably and expeditiously. The ultimate outcomes of the organization are competent, capable, and relevant national lottery, that there should be compliance, that we are compliant and regulate the lottery industry, in a which is also receptive to the mandate of the National Lotteries Commission, but most importantly, that there is fair and equitable distribution of grant funding. Our strategic objectives, according to which we report, Honorable Chair and members, is to firstly be to have an effective and efficient administration of the National Lotteries Commission, that there should be financial sustainability, control and discipline in line with applicable legislation, initiatives geared towards ensuring compliance with Lotteries Act, and once more, as an objective, we have the fair and equitable grant allocations. Our performance indicators, which will be necessarily discussed further on, firstly, knowledge management, education and awareness campaigns, integrated enterprise-wide architecture. Honorable Chair and members will remember that about 3 years ago, we came here to report that our system was old and we needed to revamp our system if we wanted to deliver services to our people. That there's corporate governance, national distributing trust fund disbursements, national distributing trust fund allocations, implementation of the investment strategy, localization of procurement. We also have combating illegal lotteries, which has to do with the regulatory part of the business, monitoring the performance of the national lottery operator against the license conditions, regulation of illegal lotteries. The ones that appear in the green color, Chair, are mostly coming out of legislation and regulations, the 150 days turnaround time, the 5% distribution across all provinces, side visits, which have to do with monitoring and evaluation, and the fourth one, which we thought would be important, was to conduct an impact evaluation study in 4 provinces. So this is usually the slide that has a lot of information and can be quite tedious to go through everything, because under every strategic objective, we then got to illustrate firstly the targets, the milestones for Q2, and indicate whether that would have been achieved or not. Can I be guided by Honorable Chair whether I go through each and every one? Because I think it's more than 3 slides.
I am also guided by members. There are a number of members who really only came in late last year. You know,
okay.
About that, I mean, with hospitalization and so on, one of them. And I'll talk with them. Those of us who've been here for 18 months are aware of this, as you know, so don't want Honourable MacPherson. We are the, you know, just about like the furniture here. So you're looking at Honourable Pachalia. It's that what it is, right. I didn't know, wasn't aware I had a ranking. I'm not a horse. But carry on, the next one. it's a joke. But look here, members, would you like to go through each and every one? I don't want you to say to me afterwards, I didn't understand this. You have got an hour for this session. Speak up or forever hold your peace. Honorable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I just wanted to check, because as you clearly indicated that some of us are new, and can we at least get a sense of what is happening in the department so that we can be able to grasp and understand. Thanks.
Money is involved and all kinds of you know, different sides of comments, some positive, some negative, arise. And this is the committee that it falls under. Are you implementing the mandate as intended? And I think it's an important one. As a matter of fact, I couldn't understand why, say, regulating illegal ones. There shouldn't be a question of they're not, shouldn't be around. But, you know, these are the kind of issues that will pop up. So where you think this is a small issue, you know, when I say that it's a lighter issue, you can go faster or swiftly. Where it's a very serious issue, spend more time.
Well, Dulce, thank you. The first strategic objective is to enhance administration, ensure compliance with applicable legislation and policy prescripts. Now, under this objective, we had as a target development of a knowledge hub where beneficiaries would have requested the National Lotteries Commission to establish a knowledge hub or website to facilitate connection amongst them and to enable sharing of services within the networks. We have performed an audit on this, but what is important for me to explain is that, honourable members, earlier on, the chairperson spoke about the national endeavour and the resolution. After we get those resolutions from the beneficiaries, we then integrate them into our strategies and make sure that there's a clear performance objective and we can track whether that would have been achieved or not. So we performed the audit as per the milestone for the second quarter and achieved that. On the number of stakeholder engagements conducted per province, because we now have small offices in every province, that was an attempt to take services to the people and ensure that people in all corners of the country have access to the National Lotteries Fund. We have conducted 8 stakeholder engagements in 3 provinces, and in total, with the others that would have happened, we've achieved 39 stakeholder engagements. So that's what was conducted. I spoke about the enterprise-wide architecture platform, which is very critical to our grant-making system. As we receive the application from an applicant, the application then gets fed into the system. Everything is scanned into the system and given a number. And from that point until the adjudication, until the payment, we work with the number and not the name of the organization or the name of the applicant. That's one of the measures that's been used to make sure that there's an element of credibility in how grant funding is necessarily done. So we are at a point where we've collated information, but what was important as well about this strategic objective is that, or this target is that, people being people, we know that there are challenges, so we have made sure that this new system that we are implementing has a capability to pick up or to connect with, firstly, CPIC, with SARS, with Home Affairs, as well as social development, so that we can check whether our applicants are fit and proper before they can be given or allocated funding. The number of organization-wide ethical behavior, given the type of organization we are, the board mandated us to focus on this issue a lot because that would help us to ensure the credibility of the system and of the organization. This was also achieved. It's workshop. It's various processes that are followed in making sure that officials internally are also focusing on their work and not getting into playing in that area where grant funding actually happens. The second strategic objective is to ensure financial sustainability, control and discipline in line with applicable legislation and policy prescripts. Under this strategic objectives, we had about 4 targets that will speak to the disbursements of grants that in the second quarter we would have disbursed 40%, and the target was achieved as it was set, the total returns to beneficiaries per capita. And let me explain this, Chair. It's a process, a kind of innovation that management went into to look at the grant and determine how many people actually benefit out of that grant. At the moment, the target we had set was 1,500 per capita, but we have achieved 1,914 per capita. The percentage return on investments, I think the COO will talk to this issue of returns. It's meant to ensure that we don't rely on the money that comes from the operator only, that whilst this money is waiting for allocation or disbursement, we have a creative way of ensuring that it's invested short-term and long-term. The target that was set, the milestone was 8%. We achieved 8.26% in the second quarter. Now, on localized procurement, because we got to decentralize, it was a bit of a problem, like it happens in most organizations where the head office will continue to procure everything and send to the provinces. We realized that that wouldn't benefit the economy of different provinces, and we set a target that from that procurement budget, 90% should be spent in the different provinces. 98% was actually spent, and we have achieved that target. Strategic objective 3 has to do with implementation of relevant initiatives geared towards ensuring compliance with the Act, and that the percentage of investigation is focusing mostly on issues pertaining to illegal lotteries, that our staff members, despite not having enforcement powers, get to investigate illegal lotteries. They then work with the National Gambling Board, the provincial ones, because they're the ones who have inspectors and people who can enforce the law, and the police to some extent. We would have investigated, and instead of 75%, 71%, and 29% of the cases are still under investigation. There's a lot in this space, Chair. I think it is mainly due to the economy or the economic situation in the country, where we find that most people are unemployed, and maybe it's how people are trying to be creative to make more money. Now, conducting a feasibility study to determine the regulation of illegal lotteries, this has been done. The report is being drafted, so we have achieved that target for the second quarter. And on implementing the monitoring of the operator, that is the license, you know, there's a lot of focus on this, and this target is always achieved. We come to the interesting one, which has to do with ensuring fair and equitable grant allocation. We're saying, the Chair, that target relates to percentage of applications adjudicated within 150 days. Remember, it's the second year of our implementation of this legislation. And after clearing the backlog and opening the system that people should just walk in and submit their applications, we've been able to create a system where we trace an application from the time it's submitted until it is paid. We can proudly say that the target for the second quarter was 40% of the applications that would have been adjudicated within 150 days. But because we have full-time members of the distributing agency, we have 92% adjudicated within 150 days. On the Lotteries Act requirement of allocating, distributing 5% per province, because it was the second quarter, we have divided this into first quarter, because there isn't much activity. We are expected to deliver 1% there. The second quarter is 2%. The third quarter is 3%. But the fourth quarter will be 5%. And the milestone for quarter two was a minimum of 2% grant funding allocated to each province. That has been achieved according to the table on the right-hand side. And members, Chair and honorable members, we're hoping that in future this figure will be giving a clear picture. At the moment, these percentages are informed by all those old applications and including the new ones. But we're hoping that in the new financial year, as we move on, it will also be very easy to implement this 5% allocation, as well as to monitor and report on it. The Eastern Cape for second quarter, we had distributed 10%, Free State 7%, Gauteng 32%, KZN 14%, Limpopo 8%, Mpumalanga 8%, Northern Cape 6%, Northwest 7%, the Western Cape 8%. Now, on the number of impact assessments and site visits, our monitoring and evaluation was supposed to conduct 1,000 impact assessments, and they overachieved. They are at 1,253. On conducting studies to assess our impact in the four provinces, two provinces are completed, but this target has not been achieved. We've had a problem with the supply chain processes. We lagged behind a little bit, but when we finish the year in April, we would have achieved. Out of all those targets, we have achieved 15. The number of targets is 15. We have achieved 14, which translates into 93%, and we haven't achieved one, which has to do with the impact study. So, further on litigation matters, we continue to be challenged by beneficiaries from time to time. We've had Africa Freedom Climbers, just to give honorable members a little bit of background. The applicant would have applied for 19 million because he or she wanted to teach children how to climb mountains. They would end up summiting the famous Mount Kilimanjaro. But then the application form used was wrong. It was an application form for a small grant of 500,000. But in addition to that as well, the applicant didn't qualify for a big grant because the NPO had just been registered. The applicant was unhappy. He took the matter to court, and as indicated here, the matter was heard on the 13th of November, and the applicant lost that matter. Tusanang Adventures is another applicant who's unhappy that the application was cancelled a while ago. It's a matter that started around 2013-2014. It's those applications that were withdrawn because there were challenges, and the applicant would like to take us to court, still demand the 9.6 million. We have briefed the lawyers because according to what had happened, there had been a clear investigation around this organization and the money they had to receive. The matter is still continuing. Now, Chair. Honorable Chair, the Chairman of the Lotteries Commission spoke about the Lottery Star. We get the Lotto Star. We get to discuss this matter regularly in our CCRD meetings and with the department as a whole. Sometime in towards the end of 2016, there was a decision taken. The board also advised that we should go to court and apply for a declaration order against Lotto Star. The matter hasn't been heard. We're still waiting for that to go on register. We do not have a lot on labor-related matters. Just to give a background, we are an organization with a total staff complement of almost 294. But thus far, we've had two grievances. We've had three CCMA cases. One is finalized, two pending. We've had one precautionary suspension. We've had one labor court matter, which is pending. And we finalized all the appeals. On employment workforce, this is the profile of the employees of the National Lotteries Commission at the moment, that 50% are at the executive level are male and 50% are female. At senior management level, we have 47% being male and 38% being female. No, 53% being female, I apologize. For staff, we have 41% male and 59% female. Fixed term contracts, we have 50% male and 50% female. We also get to employ a lot of young people and support them in terms of them getting experiential learning. This is a project driven quite aggressively by our board, and most of them who've had an opportunity of coming into the organization, especially the ones who are in IT, they don't struggle to find employment or placement as soon as they complete their internship. We have 40% of them being male and 50% female. So this is the staff complement. We are saying 43% of the total staff is male and 57% is female. Now, the next one is a table indicating people with disabilities. At the executive level, we don't have. At senior management, we have 4. At staff level, we have 6. And fixed term and interns, we have 1. We are aware that apparently there's a new requirement coming around this, and that is in our manpower strategy. We're looking into achieving that 7%. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to Mr. Letuaba for the finances and linking them to also both grant funding as well as regulations. Thank you.
Is it Lidwaba, and you are the Chief Operating Officer of the Commission. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My presentation will focus on grant funding as well as addressing finance matters, Chair. The Chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission as well as the Commissioner have indicated that this entity's mandate, the primary mandate, is that of regulation. We are regulating the lotteries as well as the sports pools and society lotteries. It is through that regulatory function that we derive revenue that one, assist in running the operations of the organization, but secondly, we are distributing it for good causes, which is the grant funding of National Lotteries Commission. So just to go into this grant funding part of it, there has been introduction of the new act that we are implementing as well as the regulations that goes with it, with clear targets in terms of what we need to do to make sure that we assist the beneficiaries who are dependent on the grant from the National Lotteries. And some of them, they go deeper into ensuring the operational efficiency of the organization. We've set for ourselves, beyond the issues of 150 days targets, as well as other matters that are relating to grant funding, we've at an operational level looked into how do we best implement the regulation. The regulations demands of us that we need to inform the beneficiaries, and I think this is a historical problem that the National Lotteries Commission has been struggling with in making sure that once a decision is made by the Commission, the beneficiaries are informed within a appropriate time. And the regulation has given us 30 days target on that. On that, we are happy, Chair, to report that we are at 72% in terms of all the decisions that the Commission has made, where we have informed the beneficiaries. But of course, we also look at the number of applications that have been approved in the period under review. On all the applications that have been adjudicated, 7,578 applications have been considered for the period ending September. Only 32% of those were approved applications. And this, Chair, it may look like a very small percentage in terms of the approvals that we've received. Them has been addressed legislatively as well as operationally, because the NLC has been inundated with applicants that are non-compliant. Through the introduction of the new legislation as well as the regulation and the operational efficiencies that came with it, we have made it a point that we are reorganizing the organization at the provincial level, all our provincial offices, to make sure that we are capacitating our beneficiaries to in completing the application forms, as well as making sure that their objectives of the applications are aligned to the objectives of the organization. There's a matter also that deals with the old projects, and this is one of the operational matters that the organization has put it as a priority, and we hope that in the next year or two we should be taking it out of our radar, because this represents projects that are older than 5 years, which have been inactive and sitting on our balance sheet as liabilities, some of them still in the process of being processed. We've taken it as a special project, Chair, and on the ones that were not approved yet, the Commission has indicated that we've cleared that backlog, that we don't have any old applications that are pending consideration by the distributing agencies. This one that I'm talking to now, it is the old projects that have been approved that are still being implemented, where beneficiaries have not reported on the progress on the projects, second tranches, but as well as those projects that have remained open on our system for a long time. So we've moved in terms of that process, Chair. We started from 30,000 when we started this financial year. I'm happy to report that we're at this point in time at below 8,000 applications or projects that are active and old. But later in my presentation, you will see how we age, the age of these projects, and how we are dealing with them. In the next slide, Chair, the Commissioner has spoken to the 5% allocation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide. I'd like to move on to the next slide. On all the projects that we are funding, there is an extensive monitoring and evaluation that is happening. We've taken it from a national level to a provincial level, as the Chairperson has indicated, that we've now capacitated and strengthened our capacity of monitoring and evaluation at the provincial level, where we are now making sure that at least 60% of all the projects that were funded are visited within a financial year. So for this period that we are reporting on, 623 projects have been visited, and we still continue to make sure that come the end of the financial year, we've achieved that 60% minimum of all the projects that have been approved in the current financial year. But of course, as part of the work that we do in granting, there is a positive offspring that comes out of that, because our funding, we make sure that it's aligned to the government priorities. We're dealing with the issues of job creation in the country, and that is where we are in terms of the number of jobs, permanent jobs that have been created in various provinces through the funding of the NLC. The next page It also talks to a similar thing, but looking at the temporary jobs that we have created on this. And Chair, I must just indicate that on all the projects that were funded and on all the jobs that we've created, permanent or temporary, there is a work that we do to check whether for sustainability that those jobs are sustained for a longer period, that we don't report this year that we've created these jobs and then the next 2 years those people are out of the job. The National Lotteries Commission, through the funding, also we look at the legacy projects that we develop infrastructure. Historically, we would fund operational needs of our beneficiaries, but we've realized that there is a need for infrastructure development on the sectors that we support. 2 years ago, the board had approved over 500 million in terms of ECD projects that we were doing in all the in all the provinces. A minimum of 10 has been constructed in all the provinces, the bricks and mortar, and also a minimum of 10 of the EDU containers have been distributed in areas where there is no land or where there is challenges of land. And we're happy that that project, Chair, in summary, were at 98% stage of completion. The only challenge that we've had is halting because of the land issues, the space issues there. The ECD, Chair. Yes. And we've made progress on that as well. I'm happy to report also that all those ECDs, the construction has started. We hope that it will be completed by the end of this financial year. Obviously, this is just one project that we are doing, but also the ECD project, legacy project, was approved 2 years ago. This year, the board has also approved the construction of the old age homes, which we are doing in six rural provinces. And this is also, we are reporting on it as well, Chair. Now turning my attention to the financial health of the organization, I present to you the balance sheet of the organization as at the end of September. In terms of the asset base of the organization, we are sitting with 1.8 billion. And that is significantly made up of cash, as you know, that the our work, we are a very highly liquid organization. Most of the assets that we have is cash assets, and primarily most of those we've kept them as reserve just to cushion the organization in case where there is a challenge with the operations of the operator. But then we'll also discuss that as in the next slides. On the current assets, Chair, you will see that we've got about 1 billion of assets sitting there, and the total of your non-current as well as the long or current and non-current assets gives a total of 2.8 billion as the total asset base of the organization. Yes, in terms of the liabilities, our liabilities are significantly constituted of the grants that are due to be paid to the beneficiaries. So it will be those that we are paying in the short term and those that we are paying in the long term. We don't have significant operational liabilities. And you will see there that by the end of September, the provision for allocation by distributing agencies was sitting at 2.2 billion. At the end of September, Chair. And I think that is the financial position of the organization. But in terms of performance, on the next slide that talks to revenue, you will see that historically the NLC would receive an average of 1.5 billion as a minimum of on the revenue. We've experienced challenges, and some of them are highlighted by presentation by the Commissioner as well as the Chair, in terms of the intrusion of illegal lotteries into the space of, or the exclusive space of the operator. And that has eaten into the revenue that the operator has been or would be able to make in the current financial year. We are targeted that by September we will be at 884 million in terms of revenue.
but then we were at 691. But these are the challenges that the board is addressing through various channels, and one including the issues of dealing with these illegal lotteries through the court challenges, but also actively engaging the operator on finding ways in which we can increase revenue, but also within the regulated mandate of responsible gambling. Chair, just to also draw the attention of the members to the other revenue that we get, other than the mainstream revenue that we get from the license, we keep a minimum of 1.5 billion in reserves. And this is intended because the license, it's an 8-year license. At the end of the license, we usually have challenges with either court challenge or something that comes and disturbs the operation of the lottery. So this reserve, we keep it for in case something happens, we're able to continue supporting the beneficiaries who are dependent on the grant of the National Lottery. So through that, we get interest that we are keeping with on investment. Up to the end of September, we had received about 96 million of that. And that goes a long way in terms of funding some of the operational requirements of the commission. So this is just a small amount that we're also receiving from society lotteries. And this is an opportunity because when we give society lotteries, as the chair has indicated, is an opportunity for NGOs and NPOs. In particular, we find that the schools participate in that, where they do fundraising activities. We do license those fundraising activities, and we get a portion of the revenue or the proceeds that they will have raised through that activity. So this is a representation of that revenue. And we look into that as well in terms of making sure that while we continue funding these NGOs and NPOs, we also direct them to that opportunity for their own sustainability. The next one that deals with the grants, Chair, we have three main sectors that we are funding. The arts sector, the charity sector, as well as the sports sector. The miscellaneous sector is there at a very low level. At the end of September, we had distributed 217 million in the arts sector. We have distributed 493 million in the charity sector, and we had also distributed 235 million in the sports sector. So these are the key main sectors. Overall, 966 million had been allocated and approved by the end of September. Our target is to allocate the full budget of 1.5 billion by the end of this financial year. The next slide, Chair, that deals with this, the age, and it talks to the previous slide that I spoke to, and this is my last slide in terms of just to demonstrate or indicate to the members that we are dealing with those projects that have remained inactive, and the reason we're dealing with them, one, is to ensure that the funding that we have put in there, it is working for the intended purpose. But secondly, many cases we find that the projects are not moving because of capacity issues of the beneficiaries. So it's an opportunity for the NLC to then go into those communities and capacitate those beneficiaries so that they are able to complete the project, or if it is an operational project that supports a community, we're able to make sure that they continue to be sustainable into the future. So these are active liabilities that are sitting on our balance sheet in terms of the age projects. We've got those that are older than 5 years at 34 million. And then you would see then the age goes on like that. Our target is to make sure that we remain with the current as well as the 2016-2017, because we know most of our projects, they run over 2 years. So we are cleaning that book to make sure that come the end of the financial year, we don't have any projects that are inactive in over 5 years. We are targeting them like that. And you would see that amongst all the payments that we've made in this current financial year, there are those that we've made that relates to projects that are older than 5 years and older than 4 years. And that's because we've brought interventions at the provincial level to make sure that those projects are resuscitated and the beneficiaries are capacitated to execute the project. That was the my last slide, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we'll do the engagement immediately. Prof, just a quick comment here from yourself.
Chairperson, I think it will be irresponsible for us just only to concentrate on the second quarter report. We are the organization that is on the public domain. From last year, we had some media people writing questions for us asking about other projects. The first one was ENCA, which led for that type of media to do an investigation on the project. It is a borehole project. There was a time that the NLC board took a decision to provide, I'm sure it was 20 or was, I think it was 50 something, 55 million to help provinces that are having drought. We did this in conjunction with the Department of Water Affairs. Minister Nombula Mkonyane also reported on it, I think it was last year, when she was addressing Parliament. So that project, media took it as if the lottery is reckless. We invited them and gave them the coordinates where the boreholes are. And we have our boreholes were much cheaper than the ones provided by the department. The National Lottery, in terms of providing this infrastructure, for example, we have built a school in Vuani after that that war. The school which went down, we provided the school with 25 million. We built 25 classrooms, desks, laboratory science, and the principal's office and the staff room, which is fully furnished by that 25. And we made an example because we're talking to the department, and the department says no. In terms of procurement policies of the department, this school might cost 90 million, 100 million, but we've built it with 25. So I think there were problems with such projects. I'm saying this so that members must aware that when we received the concern of the borehole project, we invited the author of the story. And we later realized that the author has advised members that I'm having a fund which, if you write a story about National Lotteries Commission, we are going to pay you. Then I think last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a story in the Sunday Times about, lotto premiers. So we have taken the issue forward. We briefed the minister, and because our processes were done with ENCA, with our monitoring and evaluation. Now, for the sake of making sure that we are accountable to Parliament, we have appointed an independent person to investigate the project. And once the findings are found, we will share them with this committee. So we don't want to hide that which is happening outside. We are accountable. Where we have made a mistake, we will agree that we have made a mistake. We don't influence organizations to apply. We allow them to approach us as according to the Act. Thank you.
Much, and we look forward to getting that report from yourself, the DG, and the Minister. Thank you very much, Chairman. Honourable Williams, yes. Honourable Mantash, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Buyani, Honourable Van Stelbeek, Honourable Kachalia, Honourable, yes, Esther Hazel. In that order, please. I'm asking all members to try and stick to about 2 to 2.5 minutes, if possible. Right, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I just want to welcome the input, and I want to congratulate you on getting a clean audit. Well done for that. That's excellent. I just want to talk about the proactive funding. Now, I'm going to name an institution that I think should get proactive funding. It's the National Sea Rescue Institute. And the reason why I say this is the National Sea Rescue Institute is the only organization in South Africa that rescues people who are in distress on water, both inland and at sea. And my concern is an organization like that, that's the only one. The government doesn't have anything like this. So if you're in a boat or you're struggling to swim, the only institution that's going to rescue you is fundamentally a charity. And this is a little bit concerning, because if that institution runs out of funding, then basically we've got a huge vacuum where that is, and in particular that affects our fishers, because, you know, the fishermen and women who, you know, work on our coastlines, they have no other rescue institution available to them except for the National Sea Rescue Institute, and I'm just wondering why they haven't been included in the proactive funding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered by Honourable Williams on the proactive funding, but I wanted to check how do you ensure that it is not abused by applicants. I also want to ask, as I look into your slides, I can see your allocations to provinces, and my assumption is you give more assistance to well-to-do provinces and do little on the poor ones. For instance, we have taken a decision that as we build settlements for our people, schools, clinics should follow them. And for me, that's the area that I thought you would concentrate on, and this is not happening, especially in our poor provinces. I can see your footprint in the Limpopo, but there's nothing in the Eastern Cape that talks to proper funding of your, by yourself. I'm looking at the ECD program. I'm looking at it on what you are saying on the slides. I must be convinced that this is the best you can do to alleviate poverty in those areas, because I believe that education is one of the instruments that would assist us in alleviating poverty. So I'm worried about that that progress, but I must be convinced if it is the best. We also don't have sports facilities in the areas that we're talking about. And that footprint for me is not enough. Can you do more or you can't? And what must we do? Do the people of the Eastern Cape know about how to access yourself? Thank you,
Chair. Yes, Honourable McPherson.
I'm sorry. On your employment report on your workforce, I see there's permanent temps. What does permanent temp mean?
Sorry, I just have to shift to the side because those microphones are broken.
Officially, in a letter. No, right. Honourable McPherson.
Chair, I think that sometimes clean audits can sometimes sort of hide the concerns, you know, about particular organizations. And while clean audits are important, that doesn't necessarily transcend into, you know, the optimal functioning of an organization such as the National Lotteries Commission. So, and I bear the brunt of that because my office, you know, continuously receives complaints about how long it takes for applications to be adjudicated, some up to 2 years. And there was a question that I had submitted to the minister, and the response that I had got was that there were 6,000 applications in July last year that had still not been adjudicated. Now, while I appreciate there's no backlog, you know, I, you know, still believe that those adjudications just literally took place. A large number of them were rejected or just told to reapply, just to say that the backlog has now been done. But in fact, you know, very few people had actually got a response and were then told just to simply reapply. And then, you know, if one looks at where the money from the National Lotteries Commission is actually going, it astounds me that so much money, you know, nearly 800 million rand over 10 years has gone to one body, that being SASCOC. That's an extraordinary amount of money and represents about 8% of the total disbursements for the National Lotteries Commission over 10 years. Now, I try and wonder what is so spectacularly important around SASCOC that they deserve to receive so much money when there are so many sporting federations and bodies in rural provinces, and Mrs. Mantash will know exactly what I'm talking about, that never receive money. Yet one organization receives 8% of its budget, of the entire disbursements. And then I want to talk about the article that the chairperson referred to regarding the Sunday Times, that appeared in the Sunday Times of the board. I think that article is extremely concerning. And it was something that I had raised in 2015 when these regulations were put to Parliament. And in fact, I identified the possibility of conduits being abused to become lotterpreneurs, which is exactly what is happening now. And so I want to welcome the announcement by Professor Navatunde that there is an independent investigation taking place into this. But I think that what the Commission seriously needs to do is re-look at the way in which applicants engage with them. I solely don't believe that it is sufficient in which it is done at the moment, Professor. And because if it was sufficient, those complaints, which you probably get far more than I do, wouldn't exist. The time in which it takes to adjudicate application is not sufficient. The ability for conduits to skim off of the top is simply not okay. And I think that also the way in which, you know, funding is allocated to big bodies like SASCOC seriously needs to be reconsidered. I mean, I think that those bodies should be seeking private sector investment and private sector funding as opposed to using 8% of your total disbursements over 10 years, which could have been going to, you know, these federations in rural committees, or at least communities. So I would just like just the following questions to be answered. How was that backlog actually dealt with, and what percentage of that backlog were actually successful, and what percentage were told to reapply? What are your views in SASCOC in going forward? And then the last one would be, Professor, when will that, what is the timelines for that investigation to be completed? Thank you.
Just a little advice to all of us, and that is let's get to the questions, which didn't take long. I do appreciate that some of these questions need a preface. Let us not spend two-thirds of our time on the preface. Right. Was it yourself, Honorable Buyani?
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the report and also applaud the department for the clean audit. I think on slide 11, they spoke of localized procurement to province. I just want to check how is this measured, and does this contribute to local manufacturing? Secondly, the presenter says they've achieved 72% in terms of the communication to the applicants. What could be the difficult in terms of achieving or reaching the 100% of the applicants in terms of communication? Besides the challenge of the illegal lotteries, can the NLC reflect on an statistics in terms of ticket sales, whether it's growing or declining, and if declining, how are they responding to that decline? Second last, have you not experienced any incident of corruption by beneficiaries or from their grant? If yes, how? Can you have a clarity, broader clarity on that? Because we still have to check in terms of what is happening there. Chair, I also need clarity in terms of the job creation, permanent vis-a-vis the temporary. Because I saw there in Mpumalanga only there's zero, only the charities there. And there are a lot of applications that were sent maybe through the offices. So I need to check in terms of what is happening there as per the mandate of your department. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Buyani. Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with the last one that Honorable Buyani raised. Also, I'm looking at the zeros in terms of Mpumalanga, in terms of the permanent jobs that has not been created, but looking at the temporary jobs, and I compare that to the other provinces. Mpumalanga stands out in terms of the low level of temporary jobs also being created. But there's also a lot of zeros, all zeros in terms of Northwest. Can you just clarify that in order for us to understand that one? Then you are talking, when looking at your staff complement, you don't elaborate or tell us in terms of numbers where your staff complement stands, in terms of how many permanent, how many casual jobs that you have, and also if you have a vacancy rate. Can you please give us some insight in that regard? When looking at your investigations that's been done in terms of identification and reporting of illegal lotteries, can you give us some kind of indication in terms of numbers of how big this industry is? Because you are mentioning that in percentage-wise, in terms of the identification and reporting, but I'm curious in terms of how big this industry really is. Then I think I'll pause there, Chairperson, for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Starting on page 6, full-time DA for both charities, arts and culture, have been fully integrated. I sit on arts and culture as well. The DAs for arts and failed in their task before, and I hope it's better now. The minister determined that not less than 45% of the amount available must be allocated for these purposes, and less than 28% was allocated for arts before, which was not a good figure. The next page, page 7, illegal lotteries. Well, this is a sad story. It cost the country more than 100 million in tax revenue alone, which of course affects service delivery. The vision, page 10, organized performance. Somebody mentioned here, no, we're not creating. I think the whole intent here is to expand the economy, hopefully through BEE, and not traditionally white-owned companies that merely redistribute what was already owned there. What we need is to uplift capable black people with sufficient potential to be able to operate in a specific market segment and to buy equity within the view of black Kenton take over the majority of the ownership. This is what the intended be. We don't need to create a certain elite. Instead of reversing fundamental issues of income inequality, these policies create a very influential black elite class. And the rising proportion of income being allocated to this category further verifies the squeeze on the middle class. And that's a fact. That's unfortunately what happened. Page 13, 2000... site visits. Between the NCC and NEF, if this is true of so many site visits, I don't know how it's possible that nearly 300 million rand was written off for bad loans. 93% on the page 14, 93% achievement. Also, I'm a little bit skeptical about that. You know, we say Mozambique's economy has lifted up by 20%. If you have 2%, it's easy to lift. If you have two targets, it's easy to lift it up by 100% to four targets. Before this, the previous economical year, this was not the case. The target wasn't achieved. Thank you, Chief.
Members to have their pages ready. Honourable Kachadia.
Yeah, it's working. Thank you, Chair. In a statement to the press last year, the NLC identified its primary objective as protecting the vulnerable. And in view of this, I'd just like to ask if there's any particular review of the decision by the self-same organization yourselves to truncate funds to the SPCA for the protection of the vulnerable in terms of sentient animal beings as opposed to 800 million going to SASCOC. Thank you.
Hand over to the National Lotteries. Very last one. Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Sorry, Chair, I just forgot to mention this one. Also on slide 13, in terms of your impact assessment, can you give us an indication on terms of what proportion of the beneficiaries are being visited in terms of that number? Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Now, Professor, the Chairman of the National Lotteries Board, can we, Professor Neville Tondo, pardon? Well, I'm trying to allocate sufficient time to members. You actually had over 5 minutes, but I accepted that because it was pertinent. All right? So, I want to just look at the timing here and ask you, members, to take a running tea break, which will give us 15 minutes. Professor, you yourself, with your team, have had a lot of time. You will have 7 minutes, please. So please respond pertinently and succinctly.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Well, the Honourable Member, second to last, I think the document is not what we have presented. I think there is a confusion. Behind MacPherson. I think it's the document NEF and NLC. So,
which document did you speak to the National Lotteries, Honourable Yesterhays? And because it was a little slightly off, and
yes,
let's not pursue that one. Let's answer the ones directed at the National Lotteries.
Okay. Let me start by the Benin one, SASCOC. We took over, Honourable MacPherson, it's good that you are raising it, and I think me and you, we spoke about it, and the chair, when they visited the site visit. There is no legislation or a regulation that that mandates us to give SASCOC more money. However, because SASCOC's committee was the one which was a distributing agency in the NLC, that was not my making. It was the department that appointed them. And the other issue was that it seems to me that SASCOC realized that because their registration is that of an NPO, they qualify like any other NPO. The reason, and I told even the president of SASCOC and the minister of the sport, because we are fighting, that the government of South Africa shouldn't have allowed SASCOC to run away from being party to a government to be funded by the Department of Sport. So I think during that time, SASCOC thought that they can raise, as you have indicated, they can raise more money, and it didn't work. So they decided to take lottery as the mother of the sport in the country. So the 800, 900 million is true. We've been funding their programs until last year when we called them to say enough is enough. We can't use the story of animal farm. Some all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than the others.
I'm going to ask you to put this all in writing on SASCOC, because it was first raised by the Honourable Shivambu on that site visit. And then also other committee members came in. And it's a serious matter we would like to unpack, maybe in a further meeting, but do pursue the other issues.
Exactly. So we have stopped funding SASCOC. We want to fund them like any other. If we are giving 10 million, per organization or five, SASCOC will also qualify for that amount. There's no special preference as of now. Even the board that will be there when I shall have left, we have set the record straight that SASCOC must get what other organizations are getting. The Eastern Cape honorable member. Yes. The province is big, but some projects you may not see them. We are building a boxing infrastructure in boxing in Mdanzani. I forgot another area where we have spent 32 million creating a sport center, but I think is the area if you know Womrey Mali, that is where he knows the area. I'm sure around Alice. In the University of Fort Hare, this branch, which is in East London, we've built the Miriam Makeba studio, which has got its own brand, can compete internationally. So it is true, the province is too big. We are we have spoken about it, and we are going to make sure that it receives the benefit from lottery. That is the reason why we resort to sometimes on proactive funding. We agree that we have to tread carefully on proactive funding, because other organizations may get the money and go and misuse that, but we are there. How long will the investigators investigate? We have given the person 1 month, so that at least this matter is laid to rest. The truth of the project must be open to everybody. If anyone has misused the fund, well, we must be against corruption. The Rescue Institute, we have already given them more than that. We have funded them. I think it's more than 100 million by now. We have bought boats.
Give us just a written report on that, because clearly yes, there's some miscommunication.
Yes, yeah. It's true. It's a good project that we like. We even visited it and see how they are protecting the lives. The ticket sales and other issues, I think the commissioner will do that. Corruption, we invite everybody to report corruption. We were in KwaZulu-Natal last week. A person stood up and said, yes, an official tried to do corruption, and the person took his car to come to lottery and paid the official. But we say no. Corruption is about the corruptor and the corruptee. This thing must be reported. If it is not reported, we won't know. But let me end up there. The commissioner will look at the other issues.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the questions will be operational, Chair. I will just also request our COO to go through a lot of other questions that have not been attended to. For Mayor, Honorable Mayor Van Schalkwyk, I apologize. I think the slide wouldn't have given a clear illustration, but the original report that we sent gives all the information on our equity slide. It gives information on not on male and female only, but also the different racial groups, if that's what you wanted. Thank you.
We'll check with administration on that as well.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Chair? Yes, let me just try and attempt to address some of the questions with speed. The issue of the proactive funding, I think the chairperson has indicated, but just for the benefit of the members who had just joined the committee, proactive funding is not a process where beneficiaries come and apply. It is an enabling legislation to the NLC that where there are instances or areas that need intervention, and the beneficiaries in those areas are not capacitated to come and apply, we proactively as the NLC conduct a research on those areas and matters that need to be addressed in that community, and then we capacitate that community to be able to implement a project in that area proactively. so that it assists us also with the issue of equitable, fair and equitable distribution of grants, because historically you'll find that areas where people are educated, so to say, were the ones who are benefiting most, whereas the areas in the rural villages where people don't know the process of even registering an NGO, we wait for them to come and apply as the NLC. We don't proactively go to those communities and assist them in terms of application. So that is a legislation prescript that we are dealing with it, including the very same project that is in question of the water crisis that we've experienced in 2015, and the current one that is happening right now here in the Western Cape, where the National Lottery proactively goes into the areas and assists. So it is a tool available to the NLC, and therefore the issue of abuse is limited, because it's not the beneficiaries who comes. And those who are implementing, they implement in partnership with our monitoring and evaluation team, because it's mostly high-impact projects where there's a little bit of high values in those projects, because we want to make sure that by the time we leave that area, there's a noticeable impact that the NLC will have done. In terms of the distribution, or the perceived skewed distribution in terms of the provinces, Chair, we have tried and addressed this matter. You'll know that in the last 3 years, there were certain provinces that were benefiting more in terms of grant from the NLC. But as you see now, the percentages are being normalized, and Eastern Cape in particular, by the way, is coming from the regions of 7%. It's now at 10%, just to address Honorable Mandashi on that one. But it is not surprising that Gauteng and some of the bigger provinces are getting a bigger cake, Chair. It's because of a large number of informal settlements that we've got in those areas, and the issue of migration into the cities, where people, and in particular in the charities, and we go into those areas to put funds. So we try as much as we can to make sure that at minimum the 5% as prescribed by the legislation is met at all times, but also we make sure that there is equitable. To address the issue of the backlog, just the issue of, we've heard about 6,000, and Honorable McPherson, you're right that we were sitting with more than 6,000 applications that have not been considered. All those have been considered and they've been dealt with. And I've just reported that and they were considered as part of the 2017-2018 also,
right,
adjudication.
Now, what I'm going to do,
yes, Chair,
regrettably, because you've actually had 15 minutes and not 7, I've doubled your time, I'm going to, at this point, ask members who have follow-up questions to raise them on mic. There are a number of questions which were not fully responded to because I cut the time, and let me make that clear, and they will go to the National Lotteries Board, the chairman, as well as the commissioner of the NLC and the operating officer. And we will send this to you and ask you, it is Tuesday today, please can we have it by Monday morning next week, so that we've seen it, I've seen it Monday afternoon, and members have seen the responses. We would appreciate that. I can see that there have been improvements in the grant allocations to provinces, but it does remain, you know, that I am aware about the moratorium on jobs and this and that, but a question was raised along casualization. I'm not aware that you are practicing this, but I think you need to respond categorically, yes, no, if you are, you know, whatever. So let's get that very, very clear, and they'll come in each section, so you're quite clear to whom we are addressing it. Can I please have your question comment on mic, please?
Sure, I've just got two follow-ups. I had specifically asked what percentage of that backlog was actually approved, And then the second question that I have, and it relates to your position on proactive funding, and you've stated that proactive funding takes place when your communities or organizations aren't able to act, you know, for many reasons, unable to apply for themselves. So would a music festival that had previously qualified for funding on an application then qualify for proactive funding? And especially, and would they do so in violation of the cooling off period? And I refer specifically to the Buya Lakaya Music Festival in the Eastern Cape, which had made an application and had been granted it. It was then granted proactive funding and within the cooling off period. I'd like answers as to how that took place and why that took place.
MacPherson, the follow-up will Honourable Mantash for your question to be responded to in writing.
Yes, Chair, but I just want to make a comment. Based on the response of the COO, that they take funds to Gauteng province because it's a big province with a lot of informal settlements. That's the case with the other provinces as well. It is unfortunate that you take gold to Gauteng, yet those provinces are suffering. They have a lot of informal settlements, and you're not assisting us in establishing those sports facilities for our communities. I would appeal for a re-look into the matter.
Honourable Mantash, Honourable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. All my questions were not responded to. I think it will, yeah. And also a follow-up, maybe an additional question. What is the society lottery? And they can be able to clarify in terms of percentage, because they said they are giving people a grant to do whatsoever, and they claim certain percentage on that one. So I want to verify as to how that does it happen. Thanks, Chair.
I want to thank honourable members. We did give this particular presentation, the National Lotteries Commission and Board, the extra time which we had. I was myself 3 or 4 minutes late, a bit late. We started at 15:15. But that was specifically because there have been serious allegations, and we're very pleased that we're going to get a written report, a status report, as soon as this has been resolved. I was also pleased to learn about the independent investigator. Thank you very much, Professor Nevu Tando, in particular you and your team, and the Commissioner, Mrs. Mampani, and the Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Ledvaba. Thank you. Members, I said we're having a running tea break. We're due to finish at 1. I would like to finish at 1:05. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And thank you for coming here. We're now going to members, while they're getting sorted out, please fill your cups up so that you've got fresh tea. And we're going to be welcoming the National Empowerment Fund. Always like to remind members, even the old ones and those who are new, when I began to chair this committee in 2009, I think it was, this was one of the entities we were going to get rid of, but fast. We were allocating a lot of money to them, and there was hardly a single output that they were achieving, the National Empowerment Fund, let alone achieving their own mandate. Well, we engaged with this committee, and I imagine their first engagement with us was quite horrific. Well, they got that kind of news. We then learned that there would be a new, a commissioner there, etc. And we then were able to say, right, how do we deal with this? I'm saying this just giving you a little bit of time here to get organized. And the Chief Executive Officer was able to reverse that first situation.
and we have since made several engagements over the years. The committee members have of both parties have been very positive statements in the House, etc., and then in the other, you know, on other occasions, questions and so on and so forth. But this particular one entity, the Empowerment Fund, is quite specific. It is to facilitate black economic participation. And we're going to ask you, the CEO, you know, Ms. Phyllis Mtetwa, Chief Executive Officer. Of course, when we met, it was Bortolezi at the time, but you've since got married. Yes, thank you. So you can see people are just settling themselves and so on and so forth. Pardon? Indeed, many people were. I saw some of your own people there. Yes, and especially the IFP, because, of course, when I say that, KZN, and the very names, Bortolezi, must indicate who that is from. But I did see a couple of your people there, indeed. Why don't you ask members of your past and present members of Parliament? But may I just point this out to members that we do want to, we've been trying for a couple of years to try and what is the word, you know, get them capitalized and so on. But let us see where we take this now. I don't want to put words into the mouths of members here. The issue I was going to address, members, was the program. I think I'll address it while we're, you know, just doing this running tea break and members are sitting down. I asked for this to be on the program so that members were very clear. Tomorrow, the Secretariat are going to meet on the bill. And it is very important that they meet as a technical group with others and myself to, you know, just get a grip on what is going on here and here. We are going through the public hearings and so on, and there is a need for us to get a handle on what has been given to us during the public hearings after the bill was gazetted, as well as ordinary written submissions. Unfortunately, Honourable MacPherson, you had given us that apology. You were not here, I think, at that time, but your colleagues were, and I'm sure you've been very effectively briefed. There were some very significant comments made, as you are all aware. And on that note, we are ready, aren't we, to proceed with this one? And let's see who we have making the presentation here. So I'll allow your Chief Executive Officer, I think that's the best, to introduce all of you. Thank you. The Chief Executive Officer is here. She'll have a far better handle on everyone. Thank you. And welcome.
Honourable Chairperson, Madam Joan Fatt, and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, the delegation from the DTI, compliments of the new year, 2018. Our apologies, Chairperson, that when this invitation came through last Friday, we already had a long-standing arrangement to present to the portfolio committee on arts and culture. We have a similar invitation from the Department of Rural and Land Reform, but that will be in 2 weeks' time, and the Department of Tourism. So the honourable members will remember that we had informed them that the NEF works in partnership with those government departments, so they wanted to just get a feel of the, get it directly from us, just to get a feel of the work that we're doing in the creative industry. So sorry about that. So this is an enterprise development partnership that we have entered into with quite a number of government departments, which I will talk to, during this presentation. So thank you, therefore, for the indulgence to share our strategy and quarter two report with this committee as our second call of duty today. So our delegation, Madam Chairperson and honourable members, comprises the Chairperson of the NEF Board of Trustees, Mr. Rakesh Garish, and I'm sure you'd be familiar with him, who's an entrepreneur, a businessman, and the CA by profession. I'm accompanied by Ms. Hlengwe Makatini, who is our Divisional Executive for Venture Capital and Corporate Finance. And because we also had our other colleagues in Cape Town who are responsible for these partnerships with the different departments, they will be joining us. So I had to leave that other presentation. So please don't be surprised when they join us. That will be Chris Lowe, who is our regional manager here in the Western Cape, and there will be Ms. Thuli Nkomo as well. And my name is Philiswe Mthethwa. So, honourable members, our scope today covers the NEF strategic planning framework, milestones and key priorities, performance against quarter two objectives, as well as an update on a matter that continues to weigh heavily on our shoulders, which is the recapitalization of the NEF. So as the portfolio committee is aware, once again, to refresh your memories, that the NEF still remains as the only DFI in South Africa with an exclusive mandate to grow the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment in South Africa. And slide 5. So what we have done, Madam Chairperson, because when we report on our performance, we follow the guidelines that we receive from the Department of Trade and Industry. So in the main presentation, that's what I will be doing. So they will tell you, it's like that format and you have to stick to the format. But because of the other additional issues that were raised by the committee when we were here last year on the specific projects and other, strategic initiatives that we're dealing with, we have that presentation on the side. So as and when, issues come up, we will be able to actually make reference to that, presentation. But this one follows that, the guidelines that we get from the DTI. But we have incorporated the other issues that were raised by the portfolio committee in the second presentation. So you'll tell me, Madam Chair, when you think, I should also distribute that presentation. So broadly, the mandate of the NEF is two-pronged. Our injunction is to provide financial and non-financial support to black entrepreneurs, including business planning support, incubation, entrepreneurial training, mentorship, as well as the commitment to provide turnaround workouts and restructuring interventions. The second arm of the NEF mandate is in respect of engendering a culture of savings and investment among black people. That's where we go out to the townships, to the villages, and educate people about the different investment classes.
We've spoken about the work that we did when we did our first retail offer, and would actually, Madam Chairperson, would like to do more of these retail offers in the, you know, in the near future, because you'll remember that it had benefited more than 87,000, you know, beneficiaries. So, and it was only 1% of MTN. So we're saying, is the NEF, if the committee can negotiate on our behalf to roll these over, we could even do one or two years per annum, especially when you look at some of the government-owned, equity, positions in some of these things. So if government were to decide to sell Telkom, maybe if they were to think about raising additional funds for the fiscus, so then it would be great if the committee could negotiate and say sell 1% of 2% to the general public, and the NEF has the track record and expertise to roll those over throughout the country. So from previous interactions, we are encouraged that this committee agrees that black business does not equate to small business. You'll see that we get involved in small businesses, but we take our investments all the way up to actually taking our enterprises for a listing, take them for a listing on the JSE. So we start small and then grow with them until they become JSE listed entities as well. Thank you. So it is for this reason that the NEF operates fully fledged specialist investment funds dedicated to supporting SMEs. We have a fund for women-owned businesses. We have another fund for rural and community development initiatives, and another fund for medium-sized enterprises. And the last one is the Strategic Projects Fund, which focuses on the deepening and the creation of industrialization in South Africa. So the empowerment dividend, we've said this before, that when we assess our transactions, we actually look out for other development indicators such as job creation, geographic spread, women empowerment, community-based investments, and all of those things will determine the pricing formula that we'll be applying to our transactions and projects. Slide 8. Madam Chairperson, so we've been in operation for the past 13 years, but in essence I would say 12 years. And we have endeavored to provide comprehensive responses to the many challenges and market failures that typically confront black entrepreneurs with regard to limited own capital funding of between 250,000 and 75 million for startup expansion and equity transformation purposes. We provide a range of entrepreneurship development tools and dedicated mentorship support in order to address the challenge of limited management skills, including financial, marketing, and technical expertise. But where our mentors don't have the required technical expertise, we also go to your established businesses in South Africa. So I remember there was a time when we had a full session with the CEOs of the construction companies, because we wanted to see how it was possible for the construction companies in South Africa to, you know, to also involve SMMEs in their value chain. So we're sharing experiences on how we should fund the deals, what they were also experiencing on their side, and so on and so forth. So it was a dedicated session that was just looking at the involvement of SMEs in the construction industry. Those are our black-owned enterprises that will get transactions from the Department of Housing, you know, they will get, work from SANRAL and so on and so forth. So we're looking at how do we empower them to also become global players maybe in 5 or 10 years from now. So we'll get into those details later on. So the direct operational involvement of entrepreneurs in the operation of their business is another challenge, where as well as sweat capital in the early stages, which reduces the need for collateral, especially for clients with limited access to affordable capital. So the members will remember that when a business, when you come with your business plan, there is a requirement for own equity contribution. So if you go to the private sector, commercial banks, that's what they will also ask for. So we've come up with innovative financing instruments that allow people who don't have this own equity contribution to still continue, you know, with their businesses. So together with a range of partners, we provide dedicated pre- and post-investment support and technical assistance to address the overall lack of technical skills among our target markets. Our various enterprise development agreements, including wholesale agreements with leading franchises, are measures aimed at resolving challenges such as lower bargaining power and stronger competition from established businesses with entrenched market dominance. So the committee, the honorable members will also remember that we have entered into a partnership arrangement with BP, with Shell, with Nissan, with Nando's. So what will happen in those partnerships is that we create a dedicated fund, like the BP fund, where BP will actually transfer funding to the NEF. I think the last fund was about 50 million rands. So as and when BP approves, you know, black-owned enterprises that are supposed to operate their petrol stations, we will tap into their funding and then combine it with the NEF funding on a 60-40 basis. So 60% of the funds will come directly from the NEF and the 40% will come from, I'm just using BP, but we have quite a number of those, you know, partnerships with the private sector. The other one that we have is a partnership with Nissan. So what Nissan did, they said you must identify some of your, Madam Chairperson. So Nissan said you must identify your black-owned SMEs that require, you know, as part of their business model. So if they need cars, like vans. So let's say as part of their application, you can see that in their budgeting, there's an item that relates to the acquisition of these vehicles. So what Nissan does, they donate the vehicles to us. So last year, I think we got about 20. So there's another allocation. So instead of paying including, let's say, the van is going to be 300 and something thousand, you give them the car directly that comes from Nissan. So it lowers their, you know, their financial burden, you know. So, but some are very expensive also. So we'll be looking at doing more of those partnerships going forward. So we have referred to slide 9, support interventions in the pre-investment function, as the first point of contact through which the NEF provides product advisory services, manages the online business plan solution, and facilitates entrepreneurial training and incubation for our target markets. So in fact, that's what has actually attracted a lot of government departments who have partnered with the NEF, because they don't have, you know, this expertise within the department. Secondly, the NEF Socioeconomic Development Unit was established to empower black people in existing transactions and other broad-based groups through various social development interventions such as social facilitation, entrepreneurial training, and investor education. So, Madam Chair, you'll remember that we reported when we're here that we did a project that involves the community that is based in the Marikana area. It's a partnership with that community in Marikana and Lonmin. So the NEF, so they got a contract from Lonmin that was worth 1 billion rand. So they wanted to then start working on the contract. So the NEF funded them to the tune of about 100 million rand. So, but what is good about the work that we are doing, we do not just invest and then disappear, because the community will know that at all times, when they encounter any challenges with regards to that particular contract, that they can actually come back to the NEF. So there was a problem recently with that contract, but because of our socio-economic development initiatives, we're actually able to resolve it with Lonmin and the Department of Minerals. If we get time, we will tell you what the issues were. Thirdly, we have referred to ongoing portfolio management and mentorship support in the post-investment environment. And lastly, we have actually established the turnaround workouts and restructuring unit that focuses mainly on the rehabilitation of our distressed transactions, and thereby reducing the impairment levels. The unit employs a number of measures, including balance sheet restructuring, turnaround strategies for that particular business. But sometimes you'll find that a business is in financial distress because a government department has not paid them on time. So especially if you look at the transactions, our exposure in the construction industry. So what the NEF will do through our turnaround and workouts, we identify the challenges that particular enterprise has, and we would literally, Madam Chair, go and actually meet with those government departments. So the NEF on slide 9 provides the funding solutions. So you're familiar with this slide. It was just meant to refresh your memory for the implementation of BBBE codes. As an example, in addressing the ownership code, the NEF has a range of products such as acquisition finance, capital markets fund, and so on and so forth. Slide 11 and 12. It talks about the process that we follow when we look at our strategic planning framework, that we always align our work with the key priorities of government, which are about the acceleration of economic growth and transformation and the creation of decent jobs. Slide 13 and 14, Madam Chair, is looking at the key strategic objectives of the NEF, which encompass funding businesses that are owned and managed by black people, in particular those with the potential to provide a greater number of jobs. It's about the support that we provide to black women-owned entrepreneurs. And the success of these outcomes rests on the ability of the NEF and its stakeholders to ensure that the organization is adequately resourced at all times. So I will come to the recapitalization requirements. Slide 15 and 16. Honorable members, from operational inception to the end of September 2017, the NEF had approved 904 transactions worth more than 9 billion for black empowered businesses across the country. Over 6 billion of this capital has gone directly into the economy. We are certain that the portfolio committee will be pleased once again to know that for 12 years running, the NEF has secured clean external audit opinions from reputable audit firms in South Africa. To date, through its funding milestone, the NEF has supported in excess of 93,000 jobs countrywide. And once again, Madam Chairperson, if the NEF were to be properly capitalized, we could have doubled this number by now. The NEF has further 26 strategic and industrial projects that are worth 28.6 billion. So these projects are at different stages of development. And by the way, some of them, are already are operational as we currently speak. like the Busa Met that is here in the Western Cape, which started with a 10 million rand investment, went to about 100 million. That project, as we currently speak, Madam Chairperson, is worth 2.8 billion. So it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that we start small with a 10 million rand, but our ultimate objective is to grow and develop our enterprises into becoming global players within the South African economy. Slide 17. This slide reinforces the message, honorable members, that our ability to collect from loans disbursed has continued to grow year on year through improved monitoring, mentorship, our restructure and workout units. It has happened because of the engagement and litigations that the NEF has been involved in. Collections up to September 2017 totaled 427 million rand. And this was a big achievement for us, honorable members, especially in this current macro economic environment, that we are still able to actually collect this level of cash. So if you look at how much we had received from government, it was 2.4 billion from inception. We are excited to report that 2.5 billion of those funds have actually come back to the NEF. So what we do, we recycle the funds, we invest, we monitor the development of an enterprise, we exit our investments, and then we reapply those funds, to new applications. Slide 18. So in respect of the projected unencumbered cash position as at 30 September 2017, our actual cash stood at 1.3 billion, but there was 64 million that is uncommitted cash. So it means out of the 1.3, those are the investments that have already reached the, they've gone through the due diligence, they've reached the approval stage. We are busy with the collection of CPs and finalizing a few environmental issues. So it means it's money that you can't touch. The only funds available that we can use would equate to the 64 million, which is the uncommitted cash. So in order to manage the 2017-18 strategy, approval targets were reduced. So when I say approval targets for the NEF, for the transactions that you can do with NEF money, but we have had to come up with other innovative ways of doing our work. You'll see how we have actually managed to implement the program that is spearheaded by the Department of Rural with a 1 billion rand allocation that we have received from the Department of Rural. So, honorable members, in order to discharge the 2018-19 strategy, we actually need about 540 million, which will be required as an emergency cash injection. That is, if we were to still continue doing the work that the NEF has been doing over a period of time. Slide 19 and 20 refers to the key priority areas for the NEF in line with the DTI guidelines. So the first one refers to the recapitalization, as stated later. In addition to the implementation of the mandate of the NEF, a singular priority over the past few years has been to achieve the long-term recapitalization of the NEF. So as honorable members are aware, there is a process that is referred to as Project Kopano, which is the business combination process with the IDC, and that combination process is still progressing with various structures and work streams working on the implementation process. It's looking at the possibility of merging the NEF with the IDC. You'll remember that it was approved last year, in March last year. So there was, as part of the initial MOU with the IDC that was signed by the Minister of Trade and Industry and Minister of Economic Development, the IDC was supposed to approve a facility amounting to 500 million rands, which was supposed to be secured by the NEF, and it was supposed to just allow us to continue doing our work whilst we were busy with all these other processes that are currently underway that are looking at combining the two entities. So that facility has been approved. It's a facility amounting to 500 million rands. It was secured from the IDC, but remains undrawn, Madam Chairperson, due to outstanding conditions precedent that are coming from the IDC side, and those CPs that we have not been able to meet, because it started, I think it took them about a year to come, assess the operations of the NEF, conduct the due diligence, and then start submitting their reports on the NEF to their various, committee structures. So it took them almost a year to actually conclude that whole, but also to get approvals from the ministers, because that was also one of the requirements. So we are happy that it was approved, but these are the outstanding CPs. So these include obtaining a cabinet endorsement for the IDC and NEF to match, so we don't have that cabinet endorsement. We're also supposed to obtain a PFMA Section 66 approval for the limited borrowing powers that is currently with the National Treasury, but those discussions are also underway. They are asking for a pledge and cession of MTN shares, so the MTN shares that I was referring to earlier, so they want us to pledge the shares to the IDC. And this facility is scheduled to expire on 31st March 2018 if we don't get these approvals before then. So it means we would be required to start all over again. This facility will have to be extended if these CPs are not met by March 31st, would be required to ask for an extension from the IDC or start the process all over again. As indicated earlier, this facility was already approved by the two ministers, but the IDC is saying for as long as we don't have anything in writing that's coming from cabinet, the IDC board was very reluctant to actually give a go-ahead. So, Madam Chair, I still want to continue with the recapitalization issues and talk about this project, Kopano, and just finish it. So it's towards... Is it flowing for me? Okay. So Project Kopano, the background, that on 14 February 2017, both the offices of Minister Davis and...
You understand it's a continuation of a point being made, all right?
Are you with me? So I just thought I should finish this section because it doesn't really fall under the guideline and the guidance where it says talk about your quarter two performance. But we believe that it's of such a strategic nature that it requires the committee, consideration as well. So the two ministers signed a memorandum communicating the incorporation of the NEF as a subsidiary of the IDC. The terms agreed upon in the memorandum were the following: the establishment of a task team that was supposed to comprise the DTI, EDD, NT, IDC, and NEF. The task team was to identify steps for the IDC-NEF business combination stroke merger. IDC would consider also making a bridging facility available to the NEF. That's the 500 million rand facility that I was referring to, and the IDC and NEF would also propose a transitional arrangement to manage the period until NEF becomes a full subsidiary of the IDC as per the agreement between the two government departments. So the IDC and NEF then subsequently prepared a transitional arrangement document whose aim is to govern the relationship of the parties during the implementation phase. And this transitional arrangement document was submitted to the ministers for assent. We have requested for the ministers to approve the proposed transitional arrangements, because if that document is not approved, we can't actually proceed with most of the other steps that I have already highlighted. And both the IDC and the NEF have since established two structures to oversee the business combination process. And these are the chairpersons and the CEOs forum, as well as the executives forum. So these forums, especially the executive one, they meet on a weekly basis to actually look at the progress that we have achieved in the various work streams. And then the CEOs and chairpersons are supposed to meet once a month. But as I said, the ministers have not signed off on the transitional arrangement, but we met with the Minister of Trade and Industry 2 weeks ago, and he has actually made an undertaking that he will follow up with the Minister of Economic Development. On slide 42, the Executive Forum, as I said, so it's chaired by David Jarvis from the IDC side, and Ms. Hlengwe Makatini serves as his deputy. And as part of the progress already made by the Executive Forum, we have established work streams to consider key aspects of the process. And these include the strategy and mandate work stream, to which also CIFA has been co-opted, because we want to make sure that there are no mandate overlaps. So if this business combination, proceeds going forward, we need to make sure that, you know, there would be alignment between the IDC and the NEF. And then there's another work stream that focuses on the finance and accounting matters. And then the last one focuses on legislative and governance work stream. So I've spoken on slide 43 about the 500 million rand bridging facility. The role of the executives and the forum has worked with the DTI and EDD on changes to legislation, because if this were to happen, we'd need to change the NEF Act and the IDC Act. So when I was talking about the legislative and governance work stream, that's what they are looking at, and it would have to go through Parliament. The fourth preoccupation has been to consider the most optimal way of converting the NEF into a company, because currently the NEF is a trust. And the fifth point relates to the facilitation of a conversion of NEF financial reporting from GRAP to IFRS. So the other matters, Madam Chair, like slide 44, it talks about the pledging and the session of the MTN shares, cabinet approval, and the approval for limited borrowing rights. Maybe let me explain to the honourable members why this pledge of shares is a problem for the NEF. So the IDC, as I said, requires the NEF to pledge the shares it holds in MTN as security for the loan. These shares were allocated by Parliament and Government to the NEF to be used for the benefit of broad-based BEE and black people. So we are worried, Madam Chair. So yes, this is the one very strong asset that we have on our balance sheets. So it allows us to, because if you want to partner with the Department of Rural, for instance, they want to look at your balance sheet as well before they can transfer the 1 billion rand to the NEF. They want to see how strong your balance sheet is. So if you were to pledge it, so it takes away the that negotiation, you know, power and the bargaining power that the NEF has when we would be required to borrow from other people. So the NEF is therefore unable to bless the shares because we feel that once you, in terms of the NEF Act, the NEF is a trust, so we were not sure whether Parliament would actually give us the right to pledge the shares that were actually allocated for other things. And then I've spoken about the Cabinet's approval and the limited borrowing rights. So even if we were to get the 500 million rand facility from the IDC, it still requires the approval of the Minister of Finance because we don't have the borrowing powers. But the Minister of Finance has actually set up a team from the National Treasury that is looking into all of these issues, that are impacting negatively on our ability to access the funding that has been allocated to the NEF. So slide 47, the incorporation of NEF as an IDC subsidiary is a major, honourable members, in terms of the Competition Act. So approval of both the Competition Commission and Competition Tribunal is required for the merger to proceed. So the IDC and NEF have been working on a submission to the Competition Commission. However, a filing fee of 350,000 is payable when the submission is made. So we're just reluctant to proceed with the application because we don't have the Cabinet's approval. So, but all the documents are ready. As soon as we get all the approvals, we'll be able to actually lodge it with the Competition Tribunal. Slide 48 on the conversion of financial reporting to IFRS. This is just an accounting matter, but it's a lot of work because the NEF, we were actually reporting in accordance with GRAP. So if we were to be incorporated into the IDC, we'd have to convert to IFRS. It's just accounting procedures. So the NEF has requested both ministers to approve the proposed transitional arrangements and to help resolve all of the following conditions. President, I won't go through all of them. So I don't know, Madam Chair, how much time do I still have? Can I?
We do need the financials per se, which I know that you've got in here. I did see them.
Yes.
So if we could just have, taking this into account, you're looking at the second quarter,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
What you've given us was very, very important for us to take account of. But
yes.
If you would briefly just look at that, in particular going at about page 30 or something, is it?
Okay, maybe this. That yeah. It's slide 23.
I look at job creation since its inception will be important, you know, that kind of thing.
I've done that, madam.
Yes, but I'm saying you have. That's why I looked at 29, 30, you see.
Oh,
but
okay.
But page before that.
Can you go to slide 23? I won't go through
all right.
Each and every bullet point.
Right, the NEF annual performance plan.
Yes.
Right. You go ahead, please.
So, anchored on the imperative to grow black economic participation, Madam Chair, the NEF strategic plan rests on the following pillars. I said to advance BEE, and we expect approvals to peak at 1.5 billion during the financial year 2020-2021. So here, I just wanted to give you a view of where we're going with our investments. So if we're to be adequately recapitalized, we could easily do 1.5 billion per annum. So the rest is self-explanatory. 25 and 26, performance highlights. In terms of providing finance to business ventures established and managed by black people, from April 2017 to September 2018, the NEF transactions worth 368 million against a target of 350, with disbursements targeted at 500 million at year end. So the 368 does not include, as I said, the funds that we're managing on behalf of the department. I'm just talking about NEF funding only. So if I were to factor those in this financial year, Madam Chair, we'll be able to hit $1 billion again. So this one, slide 27, 28, is talking about job creation. Slide 28, because these are all our strategic objectives. Job creation, how many jobs are going to be created, in this financial year and in this quarter. Empowerment dividend, looking at the women component of the equity that goes to black women in South Africa. Slide 30 is the empowerment dividend.
Maybe that members on 28 we looked at that job creation slide earlier on, you see.
Okay,
so mine says slide 28. All right. So just all right, now we can move on, yes.
Okay. And then is the women is the target for women empowerment, and then is the empowerment dividend. So these are all the measures that we have put in place to actually, assess the performance of the NEF. Then it talks to investor education, the slide 31, and the non-financial support. So when we finalize our APP, we will put it and then submit to Parliament that this is, so much financial, non-financial support that will go to our black-owned enterprises. So there are three deliverables in terms on slide 33 of establishing the NEF as a sustainable DFI. I want to talk about this one because it is a challenge, the impairment level, but it's still very much in line with the impairment levels of other DFIs, but it's something that the board has flagged as a priority area. It's something that we have to assess on a regular basis. So the target for impairments is the maximum of 18%, and at the end of quarter two, this stood at 19.2% and was occasioned by investments not performing due to financial distress and a slower than expected investment book growth. Secondly, the targeted ROI, return on investments, is between 9 and 10%, so that's the target that has been set by the board, and even though this stood at, we achieved 8.8%, Madam Chairperson, we believe that we'll be able to actually achieve our target by year end. The third indicator that the board and the department looks at is our collections ratio of 80% for the year, so as performing at 100% in September, which means the NEF is collecting on the loan book aggressively because of the strategies and measures that we have actually put in place that have allowed us, to collect and do the cash sweeps on a regular basis. But also some of the cash, Madam Chair, comes from the exits that the NEF, has had over the last few months. And then Dr. DLR partnership, I've spoken about this project, about how it came about, that the Minister of Rural Development approached the NEF because of the track record of success in structuring startups, expansion and equity acquisition deals. And secondly, with a dedicated rural and community development fund, the NEF possesses consummate expertise in unlocking economic value in peri-urban and rural areas. Already, we can point to several milestones since the partnership began in January 2016, Madam Chairperson, that is on that slide. I've taken the committee through some of the projects. Yes. So what happens is that you start engaging with the farmers, you engage with the Valua General, the OVG, will actually do the valuation of the land, and then the NEF will work with the valuer general to actually go and do the valuations of the various businesses. So where some of the businesses, because like for instance we have a few here in the Western Cape, so we don't want the workers to acquire businesses that are not commercially viable. So what we have agreed with the department is that the NEF would then be required to come up with a turnaround strategies of those businesses that are not doing well. So maybe, Madam Chair, for the ones that are located in the Western Cape, that maybe it would be great if you could visit one or two of those. Yes. Some of them are doing very well. So as I said, the total allocation for these projects, you know, for the next financial year is another 1 billion rand. So this is organizational structure of the NEF on slide 37 and 38. So we are assisted by managers and, you know, in various departments, and we have a total staff complement of 163 at the moment. And I've spoken about the other issues. And in conclusion, we thank you, Madam Chairperson and honorable members, for your continued support and guidance, and thank you for your attention. We're ready to take the questions. As I said, on the other strategic matters, we have prepared another presentation, but we're not going to be able to fit everything in this one presentation. Like we have a presentation on the work that we are doing in the construction industry. It will say, you know, where exactly in the construction industry value chain are our enterprises, you know, participating. It talks about the values that we have already invested there. We have a section that talks about the energy sector. It talks about all these partnerships that we have with BP, Engine, and Caltex. How many transactions have we done in that particular sector? And especially that one, Madam Chair, is one of our best performing portfolio of investments. All in all, we have done how many? We've done 68 transactions in that sector alone, and 40% of those petrol stations are owned by women. We have also a section that deals with the ocean economy, the work that we're doing in the ocean economy. So I'm just saying, if the members are interested in getting that information, we have it. Thank you.
We'll have to get you back on a few things, but you were asked in particular to address some of the issues that have come up last year, which have a deadline, mm-hmm. such as what you referred to, with the deadline being March, mm-hmm. And a few other issues. But I don't want to take up the committee time. It is now 12:50, and I'm turning to committee members. Let's allow everyone to have a chance. It was Honourable MacPherson first, Honourable Williams, Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable Mantash, in that order. Let's take a couple of minutes, see how fast we can do. Members?
Thank you very much. I just as an opening question, I'd be interested to get your take on the department's decision to allow automotive manufacturers to not comply with BEE regulations in return for, cash in a venture capital fund. Now, I would think that decision by the department actually materially affects what you as the NEF are trying to, you know, create by what you said in your opening presentation is black business excellence. Because effectively what that does is it takes opportunities for transformation in existing companies away, and hopes down the line that some sort of venture capital fund would allow black entrance into the value chain. So it's a separate question to this, but I'd be interested to get your view. And with respect to the impairments, I think that it is probably one of your biggest challenges at the moment, because I think that for a financial institution, their impairments on their book is probably around 6% or so, 6 to 8%, I would believe. So I would think that your impairments are considerably higher than that, and I think that it affects the ability to do what you're required to do. What I'd be interested also is, what is your percentage of your percentage cost structure versus what your income is? If you could get that to me at some point. I know that the Honourable Hill Lewis, when he was a member of this committee, had asked for that, and I'm not sure if he had ever received that. I'd like to do that. But I want to flag what sounds more and more to me like sort of being stuck in the mud on this recapitalization of the NEF. I've been a member of this committee for 4 years now, and I've been talking about this for 4 years, and we're still here. We're almost a year on since that MOU has been signed, and I don't get the genuine, and I don't think it's your fault, but I don't get the genuine feeling that this is going anywhere quickly, and you guys are just, you know, sort of continuing to hobble along. Is there an agreed date of when this should come to finalization? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, all my questions are around slide 30. I just want to say that radical economic transformation is not limited to race. It's also about the location of those of that transformation. And then on slide 30, it says that 73% of NEF's money goes to three provinces, and the remaining six provinces only get 27%. And so there's a block in that slide that talks to year 2017-2018 percentage of annual disbursements, and then it goes on to 2021, and it says 25% every time for those six provinces, but currently they're getting 27%, so are you suggesting that they go down? Sorry, it's 30, slide 30. In the green it says their year 2017-2018 percentage of annual disbursements, 25% for those six provinces. But currently, according to the pie chart, those six provinces get 27%. So I just want to know, are you suggesting that they go down in percentage? I'm also not happy with the fact that it's just Gauteng. Perhaps it should change its name from the National Empowerment Fund to the Gauteng Empowerment Fund, because fundamentally, Gauteng, KZN, and the Western Cape get 73% of the money, whereas the other provinces, like I said, only get 27%. Why is this figure for percentage of annual disbursement remaining at 25% for those six provinces? Why isn't it going up? How are we supposed to deal with the perpetuation of underdevelopment that was perpetrated on South Africa by the apartheid regime, when you yourself are actually doing it here by your disbursements? How are you going to deal with that? For instance, the Free State gets 2% of the money, and it seems it's only going to ever get the Northern Cape 2%, and Mpumalanga 5%, Limpopo 6%, Northwest 4%, Gauteng 44%. Is this, perhaps your HQ should move to another province? This is a bit disappointing. I don't want to come back here next year, and it seems that Gauteng and KZN and Western Cape are getting bigger and better, but the other provinces are just going backwards. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Williams. Then we have the Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For me, the funds, page 33, has got a collection rate of 100%. I'm not sure. There must be some funds that was written off, non-performing loans and things that's not mentioned, and then it couldn't have been 100% collection rate. The Act also makes it clear that certain requirements are needed. We can't lend money to people that's insolvent or even the opposite. We even have a case where the minister had to intervene on a previous case, Mrs. Glomore, I think it was, that had a boutique in Johannesburg somewhere, and she had to pay back the 34 million rand. Now that's also the interest, where the interest rate comes in. What anything need to justify their existence, so there must be some interest. The interest alone on that was way over 10, maybe 11 million rand. Mr. Ratabu also had borrowed 50 million rand, and he blamed the top management of any of corruption, and they wanted the money back. Mr. Motsili Ratabu, and he claimed that they wanted the money back from him to allocate it to somebody else. What is the story on this?
Mr. Hosen, are there any other quick questions? No. Oh, Honourable Buyani.
Chair, thanks. Mine is, and let me first welcome the presentation as well, and it also indicates that maybe there's work being done because there's clean audit here. And also, I wanted to check, man, in slide 16, can I have more clarity in terms of the 26 strategies and the industrial project? Because there are provinces that I don't see, specifically Mpumalanga is not there. There's any application made or rejected, or there's no application, if not, any a project running from the site. And also in terms of the slide 36 milestone, I really want to check as to all these companies are run by and owned by blacks. I wanted to verify that seemingly because your core mandate is to transform, and that one we know, so that can we just check with the NFF and confirm that all these companies owned and managed by Black, as stipulated in slide 36. And also, I think we need to revisit our core mandate to check as to what is it that you were established to do as an NEF. Because if you go outside, you can see that there's no local industrialization. People from the country are not benefiting from the ENF, so I need serious clarity on that one. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Buyani. I've seen the hand, Honourable Montash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm partly covered by Honourable Williams on the funding extended to rich provinces by ENF continuously. But I also want to highlight that as far as we can observe, the companies that are assisted are white companies, yet your mandate is to assist black emerging businesses. I can't reconcile between the two.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash. Now, what we're looking for here, Chief Executive Officer Mtetwer, is a sharp response where, and I'm sure you may want to expand, we will, as I said, need to ask you to come back, but also a lot could be put in writing. So over to you, Master. I have just the one comment perhaps to make, and that is, I know on slide 24, my slides, NEF Strategic Plan 2018-2019, your objective geographic spread to grow investments across all provinces, I think is pertinent. And then again, I want to indicate that, yes, we are concerned about capitalization, but we cannot agree more that we will not allow fiscal good governance just to be ignored in the manner in which it appears there is a risk. And the other issue is the filing fee. Certainly, we would appreciate it if this could be waived. But your responses, please, Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. So maybe I will start from the bottom and I will go up because some of the questions are similar. On the geographic spread and you know the investments that we have made in Gauteng, Madam Chairperson, you'll remember that our model is a demand-based model. So people come and present their ideas to the NEF, and then would actually assist them to conceptualize some of those you know projects and conceptualize the investments and ensure that those investments will end up becoming viable businesses. So what is happening in some of the provinces, you'll find that there are government departments that are actively driving transformation in those provinces. So I will use Gauteng, for instance. You'll actually see what the Gauteng government is actually doing. So they create the opportunities for broad-based black economic empowerment to happen. So it's a program. So they will say, we want this housing program, and we have actually allocated to a black-owned company, and that company will approach the NEF. So I think what the honorable members must do, especially with the provinces that are underrepresented, we need to talk to the provincial governments, because it's very difficult to work in a vacuum where there is no process or effort of empowering our people. So some of it is government-led. So I'm just using that as an example. So, but the other example is where the NEF has partnerships with, you know, other private sector companies like your BPs and your Shells. And so we would say to our partners that why is it that we are seeing more applications, let's say the Shell, the garages, the petroleum stations, which is actually one of our best performing portfolio. A lot of those applications are coming from Gauteng. We just see maybe two or three per annum coming, you know, from areas like Mpumalanga. So we are saying to our partners that they should also come up with similar programs for other provinces. So they are saying there's a lot of traffic in Joburg. That's why a lot. So our investment will actually follow that pattern. It's demand driven, but the pattern. So if you look at how many garages are owned by BP in Gauteng, and then you compare that with Northwest, you'll actually find, Madam Chair, that a lot of them are located in Gauteng. But we also say to the government departments, the NEF only has 163 employees, and if you were to compare the 163 employees with the thousands and thousands of employees that you'll actually find in government departments, it's actually... we feel as the NEF is a bit unfair to actually say the NEF should now go to the provinces and even conceptualize the projects there, because the government departments should assist us with the identification, with the conceptualization. You'll remember that we got involved in Mabele Fuels, for instance, which was supposed to be located in the Free State. But unfortunately for us, we're working with a private sector company to develop that particular project. It would have empowered about 15,000 people, but the government did not proceed with, you know, they were supposed to actually legislate that it was a policy that was supposed to allow the petroleum industry to actually blend crude oil with biofuels. So after they had announced it and then they decided to can it, that one alone would have given us a huge presence in the Free State. So maybe in a roundabout way we are saying we only have 163 employees. Yes, we have regional offices, but remember, honorable member, that we also opened these offices just about you know, a few years ago, just using the Western Cape. They have given us a dedicated fund that is looking at empowering black-owned businesses. So it becomes much easier, because that funding
actually goes in as equity. So if we can't access the equity portion or grant funding from other provinces, it becomes even more difficult. I'm not saying that is a requirement, Honorable Chairperson, but I'm saying that's what they have actually done. So if you look at our investments in KZN, they are actually active. They will even, you know, those are very senior government people. They will come, interact. If we have difficulties with some of our investments, they will interact with us. We had an engagement with the Eastern Cape government recently because we want to do more investments in the Eastern Cape. They don't want to pay our companies that are involved in the construction industry. I can give you a list. Sorry?
What we'll do is there's a follow-up. We're going to get it back in writing.
Yes, so we have a list of those. So I'm using the Eastern Cape. We've had a similar discussion with the Department of Housing. They are actually very slow in paying our investors. So they will get into cash flow constraints. So you'll then say as the NEF, do you continue, you know, to support the I'm using construction industry. Because if they are not paid, then they will go under. So I'm just using that as an example, but to show you that we are actively, you know, engaged and also interacting with the various, you know, government departments and provincial departments as well. So, and then the Honourable Member was saying, what is our core mandate, that there's no industrialization and that our people are not benefiting from the NEF. I wasn't sure, Honourable Member, what that question, because that's what the NEF is all about. That's what we do. I mean, that list of projects, those are the projects we have done in the manufacturing space. We are creating the industrial capacity and so on. So that's what we do. But in addition to the creation of, industrialization by black entrepreneurs, we're saying we also want black-owned companies to be involved in the services-related sectors like tourism. You remember I showed you the video of the project we are doing in Mpumalanga, the Gorge, services-related industries. We are involved in the petroleum industry. That's not a part of manufacturing or industrialization, but we would still support them. So it's across the board. And then the Honorable Member, Mantash, was saying, I'm not sure if it was you, Honorable Member, that some of the companies are white companies. So we encourage, we don't fund white-owned businesses. But in other instances, we encourage partnerships between black and white companies. Because if you look at, so ours is to, so we do acquisitions. So there you allow a black company to acquire an equity stake in a white company as per the BEE policies that were approved by this committee and as per the codes of good practice. So you can do acquisitions. So that is a white company, but we are allowing black people, black women to acquire maybe 80 or 40 or 50% in that company. But there are other companies, especially that list of projects, which we are doing in the Strategic Projects Fund. So that list is the list of projects that are driven by black people. We start those ones from scratch. So because we said empowerment is about allowing black people to get a small stake in the existing, GDP. So that's where the 25% in the mining charter and in the construction sector, that's what it talks about. And then we also start those companies from scratch. So that's what it, but we don't fund white companies. And then the Honorable Member was saying, are these companies run and managed by black people? Yes, Honorable Member, I won't even delve into that because that's what we do. If you're not going to manage and run the company, you will not qualify for our funding. that we were asking if we're not getting applications from these areas, people must come up with ideas. So the government came up with a renewable energy program, but what you actually find, even though the NEF is not heavily involved in that for a project that's going to be somewhere in the Karoo, the people who are driving that project, which is a program that is spearheaded by the government, the people who are driving that particular project are not from that particular area. So I don't know what can be done to encourage those communities to also come up with those proposals. And then the Honorable Member was saying, when we say the collection rate is 100%, what about others that go under? So the collection rate refers to our active portfolio of investments. It's the active portfolio of investments. So the board will give us a target, and because remember, when we do an investment, if you look at the financing instruments that we put in one investment, you could have an equity instrument that goes in, you'll have a mezzanine instrument that goes in, you'll have senior debt that goes in, you'll have a working capital that goes into one investment. So when they say, when we say collection rate, we are not collecting on the equity portion, we are collecting on the senior debt portion. So what the NEF is saying is that out of the 2.4 billion that was allocated to the NEF, we have collected 2.6 back. And we still have, out of the 2.4, a lot of value in the investments that we still have, the investments that we have not, exited. So it's 2.4, it has given us 2.6, plus the value that we still have in some of those equity stakes that we have in our other investments. And then you're saying, Mr. Rahube, I think you're referring to Mr. Rahube. So sometimes when we do investments, then our investees, we take them to court. There's a litigation division in the NEF because of mismanagement of our funds. Unfortunately, as per the PFMA regulations, even if we would have given you the funding, if you are found to have, actually transgressed any of the provisions of of our requirements, we take you to court. So we took Mr. Rahube to court because our lawyers realized that he was actually mismanaging. So the DTI is involved. The minister, has been briefed about that issue. The National Treasury is briefed, but our lawyers were adamant. Right. That they will not, they are not going to withdraw that case against him.
Now, what we need to do, CEO, is you really just have 2 minutes at this point.
Okay, let me finish. Okay. Yes, no, I'm coming. Sorry.
Coming to it. That's why there is 2 points.
And then the Mr. Lomo issue was dealt with here, in Parliament. The minister was here. It was, so I don't know how it came up again, but I won't, because it was a full presentation on just one, transaction. We spent 3 hours on that particular matter. I've dealt with the geographic spread. The Gauteng is 44%, yes, but we are making progress with the opening of provincial offices. We are actually seeing a lot of progress because last year, about 65% of the investments that were finalized and concluded by the NEF, 67% of those transactions came out, outside of Gauteng. So that was a big improvement for us. And then, Honorable McPherson, the arrangement that we have in the automotive, industry. So I think what the DTI was saying there is that, so if you look at the structure of the automotive sector at the moment, I think you have about 8 OEMs in South Africa. with the introduction of BIKE. BIKE was an investment, a partnership between the IDC and a Chinese company. So they have introduced, another, it's going to be a low-cost, this thing, vehicles that they will be selling in the country. But with the introduction of BIKE, I don't think there's going to be enough space to introduce another OEM. So they were saying they don't actually believe there will be a need for the OEMs to actually sell equity to black people, because remember they were threatening to even disinvest. They were saying if government were to actually say that it will apply to the automotive industry, they will pack up and go. And the DTI, obviously, they are responsible for the automotive incentive program. So they were saying for the automotive sector, it's very easy to pack up and go. If you are not happy, it's not like some of the, the industries where you have to think and really apply your mind before deciding to go and put your investment in, in Brazil or in Australia. So because we're dealing with all of those issues, then the minister decided that maybe it was not a great idea. But where we are seeing real opportunities for the involvement of black-owned enterprises is in that whole value chain, the manufacturing automotive industry value chain, where our enterprises can provide certain parts that will go towards the manufacturing of a BMW or a Mercedes Benz. We want to increase our capacity, for instance, to manufacture, it's catalytic,
converters,
but it's leather seats, it's a whole range of other parts. But there, yes, the investments are small, but it would actually allow our, because we're saying to these OEMs that once these companies are fully established in South Africa, they must also tap into their global value chain.
Right.
So they should be able to actually sell. So it happens.
We are coming to the end, Chief Executive Officer Asimtetwa, unfortunately. And we have got a few questions that required completion. There are a couple of follow-ups which will be recorded but responded by you in writing. The issue on the OEMs will come up again, and we need that. Right, Honourable Williams, for record.
Thank you. My question that was asked on slide 30 about the percentage of annual disbursements, it seems to have gone down to the rural provinces by 2% from what it is currently, and I want to know why that is. I'm also, Chairperson, a little bit concerned about the trend that's happening in DTI, where development is only happening in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN. The black entrepreneur, the empowerment, the 100 industrialists are all basically based in those provinces. We need to look into this seriously because the underdevelopment is now wide-scale and massive. Thank you.
Williams, Honourable Mantash.
Mr. Chairperson, I would have loved to inquire from the presenter, or how do they assist SMMEs who, when they apply for funding and a collateral is needed and they can't afford it, or how would we help them?
Thank you very much. The other three or four outstanding, one has already been referred to at the Black Industrialization Program and the importance of the Development Finance Institution. And one from myself, which I would appreciate if we would respond in writing. Does the National Empowerment Fund fund municipal projects, renewable energy, that kind of thing? The last one, which I would just simply comment on, are the SRRs, which is the strengthening of relative rights of people working the farms or even on minerals, as it were, working. We asked for this to be addressed in 2015 or so. It was starting to be addressed through an MOU with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and that on slide 34, 35 is given, you know, quite a lot of traction here. But it would be useful to hear more about that, because that is a rural project-based project, and to hear about the geographical spread. You've said what can be done. When we had this challenge with the National Lotteries Board, and now we have the Commission, we actually said we may need to create a proactive approach to it as well. But I'm looking at the National Empowerment Fund, and I note that this point of recapitalization is now outstanding basically 3 years. It was raised by the committee 3 years ago. It hasn't happened. And now we are approaching the March deadline. And that, members, is why we asked for it some time on this particular one. So committee members and their respective parties can tackle this so that we empower ourselves and come with a, you know, a response and the kind of approach we need to share with you. And so there may be the need, Chief Executive Officer Mthethwa, for you to return, because that is a very critical issue, this recapitalization. And we are seemingly having quite a few challenges in that regard. But we cannot ignore the substantive points being raised by each member here, some of which members believe were not adequately responded to, is what I can say. But what we will do is to put this in writing to the National Empowerment Fund. They needed actually 2.5 hours. We allocated them 1 hour and 15 minutes. And they can respond, but also make an arrangement with the administration as to when it may be possible for you to return. I would also like the DTI present, and I think it may be pertinent to get the EDD here as well, because it is all linked to what is going on there. But I do want to thank you for the work that is being done, and also for the late notice. Our own program changed at the 11th hour through Parliament's program, and I do apologize, but I thank you for trying to be prepared and coming prepared with the presentation. Thank you, Ms. Mthethwa. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much on behalf of the board and the executives. My executives didn't get the opportunity to, as I had said, they had also prepared something as per the, you know, the questions that we had received. Maybe it would help Madam Chairperson to allocate more time when we come back, but we are still here. If the members, you know, were not satisfied, we will send our responses in writing on all the questions that were not properly addressed, but who are still here if they want to engage further. Thank you.
Time constraints contributed to the challenge, but thank you very, very much. Thank you to Ms. Gulls for being here as well, and also the entire team that you brought here. I mean, it's Makatini I see there, and many others there, and Cormore, and Garash, whom we are very familiar with as well. Thank you. Members, I have addressed you on the program. I don't need to detain you further. And thank you for giving us this extra time. The meetings are all adjourned, as you can see, as a committee until next week. You can see that, can't you? Thank you. Meeting adjourned.